Ring the bell, sucker. This is Movie Fighters, the spooky show where Chris Sims of ComicsAlliance.com and
Hello.
Other places on the internet and me, Matt Wilson, we watch movies and we beat them up. In October, we have been doing scary movies, specifically Dracula films. The last episode you heard, if you listened to our last episode, was about the brand new Dracula movie, Dracula Untold, which we did not like very much. And this episode is about the 2012 Dario Argento film, Dracula 3D, which is available on Netflix under the title Argento's Dracula.
Wait, this is from 2012?
It is from 2012.
This is from this decade.
It's from 2 years ago. It premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in 2012. May 2012.
All right, because I have not seen this movie. You watched a little bit of it, but I haven't seen it. But
I watched 79 minutes of it and decided to stop it because I was like, we have to watch this for Movie Fighters.
Well before we decided to watch it, I think back around the beginning of October, someone sent me a link on Twitter to a scene from it involving a giant praying mantis.
Correct.
I would have sworn this movie was from like 1999.
One of the gimmicks of this movie is that Dracula is constantly turning into various types of animals. Not just bats. He transforms into a wolf. He transforms into an owl. He transforms into lots of different kinds of animals. And you are correct. The special effects are very bad. But we'll get into that after we watch the movie. I wanted to just give our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with Dario Argento a little bit of background.
Well, that's good because I, as you know, I am not a I am not familiar with Dario Argento either.
Because you're not a fan of scary movies.
Don't like scary movies. I am, I would say, one of the internet's most prominent scholars of the Vin Diesel canon. So I am more familiar with Asia Argento, who starred as the female lead of XXX.
That's right. Now, Argento is widely considered to be one of the fathers of modern horror film. He also co-wrote Once Upon a Time in the West.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, that's a movie of which I'm a pretty big fan.
This guy has like one of the best pedigrees as a filmmaker that you can imagine. He collaborated with George Romero on Dawn of the Dead. He was a producer of Dawn of the Dead. He and George Romero are great friends. That's why Asia Argento is in Land of the Dead, because he and George Romero are good friends. In a lot of ways, Argento is the Italian George Romero. He is sort of credited with creating a genre, the giallo Italian horror film. The most famous one is called Suspiria, which is considered to be a masterpiece. It is a very moody, suspenseful horror film with incredible atmosphere. Plot is kind of secondary in it. It's a movie about this group of girls. I believe they're dancers. I think they're ballet dancers. That's what they are. They're ballet dancers living in a house, and basically weird stuff ends up happening in the house. It ends up to be being a coven of witches that are creating all this terror in this house of ballet dancers. It is a really great movie, which is why this movie is so strange. It clearly gives the appearance that Dario Argento, one of the most respected, most influential horror directors of the century, of the 20th century. Like John Carpenter credits him for influencing Halloween immensely. He forgot how to make movies.
Well, now, Matt, I was going to say, you've got me really nervous. because I am very easily scared. That's why I don't like scary movies. And it sounds like this guy has made some very frightening pictures.
He has. He's made some really good, scary, atmospheric movies.
I am starting to feel like this is your trick. Like, you're going to trick me into watching a scary movie by telling me that it's bad and suitable for movie fighters.
This movie is a joke. I'm going to read some quotes from the reception part of Wikipedia, the Wikipedia article about Dracula 3D. The Hollywood Reporter said that the first of many unintentional laughs in Dracula 3D comes in the opening credits. Here's something from the Variety review. Director Argento half-heartedly mixes schlocky 3D effects with one-dimensional characters for a near two-hour joke that ought to have been funnier. It is... The thing that I most want to compare it to... I want to compare it to two other directors. And it's insane that I would be comparing it to these two. The first one is Tommy Wiseau. You will see from the get-go that the acting in this movie is very Tommy Wiseau-like. The second one is Uwe Boll. Because of the terrible quality of the special effects, you talked about how it looks like it was made in 1999. I would say even worse. The special effects are so bad, it's clearly made on the tiniest of budgets, and literally everyone in the movie is miscast.
So you're telling me to expect a House of the Dead level experience from this?
It is the closest comparison I would make. The only other comparison I would make would be that if you were watching a Dracula porn, it might look something like this.
Okay, now, I should say, I love Dracula. Even though I don't like scary movies, I love Dracula movies. This will be the 12th. This will round it out to an even dozen that I have watched in the month of October alone. And just going by the poster for this movie... The poster looks amazing.
The poster is 1,000 times better than the movie.
It's like an oil painting that if you look at it full size, there's some Photoshopery going on.
Yes.
Hitting Asia Argento under this poster. But it looks amazing.
And so, what's really insane about it is that the figure in the background, the big face in the background, is Dracula. I assume that's supposed to be Dracula. That doesn't look anything like the guy who plays Dracula in this movie.
Okay.
The guy who plays Dracula in this movie is an actor named Thomas Kretschmann, who you might know from some pretty big deal films. He does not look or act like Dracula in any demonstrable way in this movie. It's amazing.
Well, here's my question. And I guess we can talk about this after we go into it. The poster is very much a throwback style poster.
Correct.
Like, the poster looks like a poster from a 70s movie.
Correct.
And then the way that it says Dracula 3D, like, just the 3D is written in the style of a, like Jaws 3D or a Piranha 3D.
Right.
Do you think that there was the motivation here to make an entire movie that would feel like a... I guess like a drive-in throwback or even a VHS throwback?
Maybe. I mean, that's one way to explain it. I'll tell you, it seems to me like a way more effort and work went into this poster than went into the entirety of this 110-minute movie. Thomas Kretschmann plays Baron von Strucker in Age of Ultron. Like, that's how big of a deal he is as an actor. He's playing Dracula in this movie, and he is full-on terrible. But we'll get to that after we watch the movie. I want to read two items, or really just one item, of trivia from IMDb about this movie. This is the first time Van Helsing, a Dutchman in the novel, has actually been portrayed by someone from the Netherlands. That is where the similarities with the Bram Stoker novel begin and end.
And we should say, who is that Dutchman?
Rutger Hauer.
Rutger Hauer.
Yes.
Who famously, of course, from a movie that I'm sure everyone has seen, probably his most iconic role. He is Dracula in Dracula 3000
as well. Certainly everybody remembers Rutger Hauer from Dracula 3000.
Oh, not Dracula 3000, excuse me, Dracula 3.
Yeah,
which is the second sequel to Dracula 2000. Sorry.
Look, he's fine in Blade Runner. Sure.
He's okay.
But Dracula 3000, that's the one. I think we have let into this movie enough. I've kind of given away the store on some things that I've already seen in the movie. So I don't do any more of that, Chris. Let's pause. Everybody, if you want to fire up Argento's Dracula 3D on Netflix, you can do that right now. Just go to Netflix and search for Argento's Dracula, and there it will be. You'll see that cool movie poster. You can watch it along with us. We're going to take a brief break with a musical interlude, and we will be back to talk about this movie. Okay, we are back from watching Argento's Dracula, and boy, I kind of didn't realize how accurate my comparison to Uwe Boll was. But upon this viewing, it is so, so similar to an Uwe Boll movie. I almost feel like he ghost-directed this.
Matt, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Outside of Rutger Hauer, was literally any person in this movie a professional actor?
I think Asia Argento is supposed to be a professional actor. And I know for a fact that Thomas Kretschmann is a professional actor who is in Marvel movies.
Okay, are you sure, though? Because the only way this movie makes sense to me is if in a gentleman's wager type situation, someone bet Dario Argento that he could not make a full 2-hour movie using only people who had no prior acting experience and Rutger Hauer.
I will give you this amazing fact. Of all the actors in this movie, Rutger Hauer somehow speaks English best.
Even he's not very good at it.
Correct, but his English is by far the most understandable, and that includes everybody who is dubbed over.
Yeah, this oh boy, the voices in this movie are amazing. We had a lot of fun doing impressions of Mina, who is so confused by Transylvania because it's so different from England.
Please, I am very tired having to come here from England.
If you have ever read or watched Dracula and thought, I know this is set in Transylvania, but what would be really good is if everyone had vague, possibly Italian accents. This is the movie for you.
I will tell you right now that the actress who played Mina is in fact Italian. I think in our impressions of her, we sort of made her German.
Yeah, because it's really... It is really hard to pin anybody down because no one has the same accent, even though I think like the vast majority of the cast is Italian.
Jonathan Harker is from Spain. The actress who plays Tanya, yes, that's her name, Tanya, is from Italy. I'd say the majority of the actors are Italian.
Okay, what about all the voiceover actors who had to do 1 hour and 50 minutes of ADR for this movie?
That I don't know. There are two standout characters who are so, so ADR'd that it's ridiculous. One of them is Lucy Kisslinger's father, the mayor of Passburg, who just doesn't even kind of try to mouth the right words and is dubbed over, like very, very clearly dubbed over. And then there's a priest character who is also dubbed over and also doesn't bother to say the words. There's a funeral scene where he is literally just moving, opening and closing his mouth like a ventriloquist dummy while somebody says the lines. And I'm fairly sure that the mayor and the priest are being overdubbed by the same guy.
It is impossible for me to believe that this movie was made by professionals.
Yes, it looks so amateurish.
The director on down. Like, it is unfathomable to me that this is not everyone's first movie.
What's really strange is, like, I feel like Uwe Boll is a more professional director than this movie makes Dario Argento seem to be.
No, this is like, I mean, you said Tommy Wiseau earlier too, and this is like if you gave Tommy Wiseau millions of dollars.
Yeah. We looked up the budget of this movie. It was 5.6 million euros, which is around $7.1 million.
This movie, this is like Dario Argento's 20th movie?
Yeah.
This is mind-boggling to me.
I mean, okay, so there are a lot of fan complaints about Dario Argento's later career, but I can't imagine that his later films, like any of them, are this bad, are as just flat-out terrible as this. Like, apparently there have been...
You can superimpose a Brazzers logo onto the bottom corner of every scene in this movie and be like, hey, check this scene out from the porno version of Dracula, and people would believe it 1,000,000%. Like, especially when Harker is involved. Like, there is not a scene with Harker where I did not 100% expect him to whip his dick out at the end of it.
It's so, so porny.
The laughs start before the first scene.
Yes, I mean...
You mentioned that the reaction at Cannes was... that people were laughing before the credits were over. And the credits start, and we get some spooky music that sounds like your Are You Afraid of the Dark background music or whatever. And I'm like, you know, okay, I can dig it. And then the theremin started.
Yeah, and the theremin in this movie, which is in the background music throughout, it's not as overbearing as you... almost would hope it would be, as like a sign that this is an intentional joke, but it's in there a lot, and it is virtually the same theremin tune that's in the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror theme music.
It is the universal symbol for flying saucer.
Yeah, it is. I said this very early on in the movie, like, I do not associate that kind of theremin music with vampires or Dracula. It's like UFO movie music.
Well, until now, when Argento came in and fucked up the genre.
Yeah, Dario Argento...
Like, you rearranged your perceptions, bro.
He flipped the script on all of us. But okay, so the first scene lets you know straight up this movie is going to be as porny as you could imagine, but only one scene is going to end in a porn ending. Or have like a porny payoff.
There's this weird establishing shot that I swear to God is rendered on an N64.
There's an opening shot during the credits of what I assume is supposed to be the town of Passburg. That's just like these boxy stone homes on a grid that look like they're from Castlevania 64.
It's mind-boggling. Again, like, was it their first day?
I don't know, but...
Did anyone work on another movie before they made this?
We meet the character Tanya, who is at home with her mother. And the first line is, Tanya, don't go out. And then Tanya says, I know it's Walpurgis night. Just so you're aware of that. And then as soon as her mom says, hey, don't go out, Tanya leaves the house and goes and meets her lover, Miloš. They meet in a barn. Miloš takes off her cape that she's wearing and puts the cape on the hay in the barn. And then they start fucking.
And it is one of the most awkward sex scenes I have ever seen in my life. It's so softcore arranged. Like, she's got like the one leg up and the dude is like one leg in the hay, and I'm just looking at it going, oh, that's real scratchy. That's so uncomfortable. And he's doing that weird softcore, like Cinemax 2 a.m. thrusting, where he's going, like, upwards and not forwards. It's so weird.
Yeah, and he's like, he's got like one knee kicked up and one leg stretched out. It's very weirdly composed. But
you called him you just called it the lateral Captain Morgan.
Yeah, he's doing the lateral Captain Morgan, and
it's also set up with this amazing cut where like he spreads the cape out on the hay and then goes back to her and they kiss a little bit, and then there is an abrupt cut and she is just leaned back on the hay, straight naked. It's so bad. It is like, it is incredibly unerotic. Also,
yes, but
for these two Italian models to be naked, literally rolling in the hay,
they somewhat uneventfully finish having sex and leave the barn. And Tanya like asks Milos to walk her home.
Yeah, she basically says, hey, you know Dracula's out here, right?
Yeah. I mean, she essentially says that it's Valpurgis night. It, you know, that means it's like an evil night. You need to walk me home so that something bad doesn't happen to me. And Milos is no, somebody will see us together, and we're not supposed to be together. A plot point that never comes up again. And he's like, somebody will see me with you. I can't. And so she gets mad and hands him back a cross necklace that he gave her, which he like then puts on a tree for no reason.
He tries to give it back to her, but she walks away and he goes, what's the hell with you? And that is the actual line. And then he ties the necklace on a tree.
So she walks away, storms away, unprotected by a cross, and starts like walking through the woods. An owl starts approaching her from behind.
And we should say, these woods look so fake, and yet I don't think they are.
Yeah, every background in this movie looks fake. And I think it has to be the result of the 3D.
Yeah, because everything's really bright and colorful. And actually, like, I don't mind that. So many of the movies we end up watching for this show are just like poorly lit and everything's brown and gray, and it's hard to make anything out. Everything in this movie is like green and violet, and yellow. It's all super bright and colorful, but it all looks fake, and I can't figure out why.
I mean,
because usually in 3D movies, everything looks blurry and dim, and so I don't know if they were overcompensating for that and ended up in
Maybe it's some kind of like digital compensation for the effects of filming in 3D. But then everything in the background, like every background looks like the background from a Resident Evil game.
Yes. I would have loved to have seen this movie in 3D, by the way.
There's some definitely like 3D moments, including this moment where the owl approaches Tanya. There's a part where the owl comes straight at the camera, attacks her, and then the owl turns into Dracula. Dracula bites her neck. While that's going on, there's a guy sitting on the porch of his house, and he gets up and he gets a shotgun, and he makes Tanya think that he's going to shoot the owl and save her. But then she doesn't, or he doesn't.
I thought he was aiming it at her, because he's the guy who turns out to be Dracula's servant. He's the town blacksmith.
He is the member of the town council that's like Dracula's mole on the town council.
He is a hardline Draculacrat.
That's
on
right.
The town
yes.
council.
He is. Who knows how he got elected?
He had that Dracula vote.
I guess so.
Dracula's votes count for 10, man.
I mean, there are only like 15 people in the town, so.
So. So, we should say the owl looks fake as hell.
Yeah, it's very CGI, but it's not even close to the most CGI bad-looking Dracula animal transformation in the movie.
Oh, no, not even close. So, the owl turns into Dracula. Dracula sucks Tanya's blood.
The guy laughs and puts the gun down. The guy on the porch.
But he has this smile on his face, and it's not like a yes, the master has fed tonight smile. It's a Dracula.
Well, it almost seems like a ha-ha, gotcha kind of thing. Like, he's playing practical jokes. Like, he's doing japes up there on the porch, just waiting for someone to come running up and for him to fool them into thinking he's going to save them. Either way, after that scene, cut to daytime. Jonathan Harker is arriving in the town of Passburg. And this shot of Jonathan getting off the train, speaking of fake shots, is the fakest looking thing I've ever seen in a movie. It is ridiculous. It's like the CGI backgrounds from Sin City times 20.
It's like four separate, completely CGI elements all stacked on top of each other. Like the mountains in the background are fake. The train is fake. The train station is fake. The horses are fake. And everything's also, again, like neon green.
Yeah. The way I described it as we were watching the movie, you know how in movies, a lot of times, they'll shoot night scenes during the day. So they don't have to light them as much, right? They don't have to pay for lighting as much. And then they'll just put a filter over them to make them look like nighttime, like a blue filter. This movie seems to do the opposite of that. Everything seems to be brightened so much, but none of the daylight looks like actual daylight.
We had a hard time figuring out whether or not every shot of this movie takes place on a soundstage.
Yeah, it seems like everything was shot indoors. Except for maybe a handful of shots. Because there is one shot later in the movie where Mina gets on a horse and it's clearly daytime turned into nighttime.
Yeah. And it's like, and this train station, it's like Thomas the Tank Engine. It looks like that.
Yeah,
it's
everything might as well be everything might as well be claymation. It is so fake looking.
Also this scene goes on for, like, I'm going to say, like, maybe 2-3 minutes, when here's what happens. Harker gets off the train and goes, well, here I am in Passburg. And that takes 3 minutes, which is a indicator of how the rest of this movie is going to go.
Yeah.
This movie is not a lean 110.
No, it is so stretched out. It makes me wish that there were captions on the bottom of the screen that just said stalling for time. Because so many scenes do this. For example, the next scene is Jonathan going to the inn. And
well, we get to see, in real time, his horse ride from the train station.
Oh, right. There's a part where he's, like, chased by wolves and then they disappear. And he says out loud, were those wolves an illusion?
Is this symbolic?
So he goes to the inn. We see him ordering food that we never get to see him eat.
Yeah, he orders food, and the innkeeper goes, I'll bring you something from the kitchen.
Yeah. We see him looking around the inn, listening to people talk, for no good reason. There's just this... That scene in the inn has no value. Yeah, at all.
No information is conveyed.
No. He could have gone directly to the mayor's office, talked to Lucy and the mayor about Dracula and how kind of weird he is, but how he's got this job at Dracula's castle cataloging his library for him. Like, he could have gone directly to the mayor's house, but for some reason, I cannot figure out, there's a scene where he goes to the inn.
You could cut this movie down, and I'm not even kidding, and I'm not exaggerating at all. You could cut this movie down to about an hour.
It's like an episode of TV. That's about how much story there is in this thing.
Do you think you could get it down to 44? I think you could get it down to an hour and not lose anything relevant to the plot. I mean, you could cut it down to 44 and have a much happier viewing experience because your whole evening wouldn't be taken up. But
yeah. I think you could get it down to 44. I really do. But there is that scene where he goes to the mayor's house. We find out that Lucy and Jonathan's wife, Mina, are good, close old friends.
Right, because Lucy, by the way, is played by Asia Argento. of Triple X.
Dario Argento's daughter.
Who, no, you're sure she's a professional actress?
I've seen her in several films.
You're sure about this? There isn't like another, she's not like on IMDb as like Asia Argento 2 or anything.
Maybe some of the other actors in this movie rubbed off on her. I do not know.
She is way better in Triple X than she is in this movie. She lives in this town. She's the mayor's daughter. And this is your kind of indication that unlike the novel, which is about Dracula leaving Transylvania and going to England and sort of invading a modern world with his old-fashioned spooky ways, this is a movie where everyone just comes to Dracula. Everyone just shows up at Dracula's house by design. Like, Dracula has a plot, and I guess we can talk about it now. Dracula saw a picture of Mina at
the mayor's house.
At the mayor's house, because Lucy and Mina, Lucy has a picture of them on their wedding day, a photograph. And Dracula thinks Mina is the reincarnation of his dead wife, so he has hired Harker to be a librarian at his castle with the understanding that Harker and Mina are both going to move to Castle Dracula. It's a needlessly complex plan. Harker and Lucy have an entire conversation that lasts a long time, standing shoulder to shoulder, facing the camera, just turning their heads towards each other. It is staged like a high school play. There's opening it up to the audience.
There's a lot of staging issues in this movie. There's a scene that comes later that is like not even student, like college student film level staging. It's like something a bunch of friends, high school friends, would get together and be like, let's make a movie. That's how this particular scene, it's one where Dracula is freeing Renfield from prison. That just looks atrocious.
Now, again, you're sure that Dario Argento has directed films before? Like, is he like a Broadway guy?
Many films. Films for which he is highly acclaimed.
You're sure about this?
100% sure.
Okay. We actually did skip over a scene.
Yeah, we'll go back to these scenes. Okay, there's a scene where some guys from the town, a lieutenant who is apparently the entire police force, and then a couple of other guys from the town council, including Milos, go to Tanya's grave to dig her up.
And everybody, by the way, looks like they got their outfits at Spirit Halloween.
It very costume shoppy.
Everyone is wearing either villager or old-timey constable in yes. this scene.
So they go to dig up Tanya's grave. She's not in there.
Which we know, because we saw her get eaten by Dracula.
Correct. She's not in there. The group starts to freak out a little bit, but before they can really do anything about it, they are approached by Renfield, who starts screaming at them.
And he walks up to them carrying a stick, like a really long stick, and waving it at the camera. So that's your 3D effect for this scene. And it's hilarious, because previous to this, the 3D effects that we've seen have been like a fly buzzing around.
Right.
And getting closer to the camera. Or the owl flying at Tanya. But just a dude waving a stick at the camera is hilarious.
In the midst of all of that, Milos gets a shovel in the head. His head is cleaved in two. And somehow the cop and the other guy, the guy from the council, manage to get away. They manage to incapacitate Renfield and get away. And they arrest Renfield. So Renfield goes to jail. There's also a scene where Harker is walking through the streets on his way to Dracula's castle. And Renfield reaches out of the window of the prison.
Well, because Harker decides to just lean up against the prison window
yes.
and watch what's happening in town.
He grabs Harker by or like around the chest and holds on to him for a while, and there's just a lengthy struggle where some police officers, some guards have to run up and like remove him from Harker and then restrain him and put a contraption on his head to keep him from biting anybody else, even though he's not a vampire.
But I guess he's bitten them before. But here's the thing. There's so much Renfield in this movie. Like, there's so much Renfield in this movie. And you could excise him from the plot completely.
Yeah.
He does nothing. Except he, like, whenever Mina shows up, he talks to Tanya. And he's like, you know, she's really pretty. That's kind of it. And Tanya gets sad.
But you're prettier. That's all he says. And he kills Miloš. Those are the things he does. So they restrain Renfield. We see Harker walk past Miloš's body, which is like being displayed in the streets after his death. And they have done, whoever fixed up that body did quite a job of stitching his head back together. Harker goes to Dracula's castle. The first person he meets at Dracula's castle is Tanya. And I swear to God, it looks like they should just start fucking any second. It is such a porn setup. Every time Jonathan is in a room with Tanya, which is multiple times, it is just a porno scene.
Yeah, and to be fair, it's because Tanya's trying to fuck him.
Or at least seduce him. Or somehow... Like, Tanya's got these weird motives. It's like Dracula turned her into a vampire and then immediately told her all his plans.
He tells her in a memory, and he's like... Like, they wake up the next morning, and she's like, do you want to get breakfast? And he's like, oh, listen, I got this girl coming in from England, and you need to get the hell out of here.
Like, you're great, and I have you here, and I need your help.
I'll always treasure what we had.
I need your help with some stuff, and hey, if you could seduce the husband, awesome. Like, get him out of my hair.
No, but he doesn't want her to seduce the husband.
We'll get to that in a minute. So there's a scene where Tanya shows up and kind of like puts the moves on Jonathan a little bit. Then Dracula shows up, and Thomas Crutchman's Dracula is a puzzle. He is just a guy in a nice coat, a nice winter coat, with a cravat and slacks.
You know what Dracula looks like, right? Like kind of blondish brown hair combed over to the side, in a peacoat.
Yeah.
You know, Dracula always pauses in the middle of every sentence like Christopher Walken.
And he also talks really quietly.
Dracula seems very worried that the audience might hear what he's saying.
He seems tired. He seems like he doesn't want to be in this movie. He seems almost fatigued. It's like it's hard for him to talk. And if... Eventually, when Rutger Hauer shows up in the movie, he talks almost even quieter. It's like Thomas Crutchman and Rutger Hauer had a bet with each other about who could talk the softest.
Yeah, I think they got together behind the scenes and said, "Do you want to have a pause off and see who can get the most pauses into their dialogue?" If I thought this movie had done more than one or two takes, I would say that every scene with Dracula was like the 28th or 29th take. But nothing in this movie looks like nothing in this movie looks like they were picking the best of multiple scenes.
No, it was one take and on to the next thing. One take and on to the next thing. But
you know, there's that famous Dracula line that he says. It's such a great line. It shows up in the movies, it's in the book. It's, you know, Harker asks him if he'll join him for a drink, and Dracula says, "I do not drink wine." And it's, you know, it's a great line. They do a variation on that, and what Argento has had him say is, "I never eat in the evening."
Yeah.
All Dracula does is eat in the evening.
And I swear to God, his costume looks like... You know how, like, in movies, when movies set in the modern day, when you're supposed to, like, get a catch that, like, oh, this is a rich guy, or this guy is somebody's boss, and we see him coming out from the cold, and he's wearing, like, an overcoat, and maybe, like, a fancy scarf, that is exactly what Dracula is wearing.
Yeah. He is the least threatening Dracula I've ever seen.
He is a somewhat well-off man who is cold.
Yeah. Even when he's got like his fangs out and his mouth has been smeared with hot pink blood.
Yeah.
He just looks like... He looks very friendly and approachable. I would believe you if you told me Dario Argento had never read Dracula or has seen a Dracula movie.
It seems plausible.
Like, he may not have. Making this movie. Like, I feel like Argento went into a bookstore and he was like, Dracula, what's that about? That seems like a cool title. And then he read it and he was like, oh my God, can we get the rights to this? And somebody was like, no, you don't need the, it's in the public domain. He's like, are you serious? Like, we can make this into a movie? Oh, this is going to be great. People are going to love this. I don't think he knows that there are other Dracula movies that exist.
The first conversation Dracula and Jonathan have is about how forward Tanya is. And Dracula's like, I apologize for Tanya.
Yeah, because Tanya's been showing up and going, hey, I really want to fuck you. And yeah. Taking off her clothes.
He's like, I apologize for Tanya's forwardness. And Jonathan's like, oh, there was no problem. And Dracula's like, she's my niece, and you know how young people are. And there is no reason for him to come up with any of these excuses. Dracula is 100% excuses in this movie.
He has so many excuses that he – and I will say I love this about Thomas Kirschman's performance. Dracula is, in the film, very clearly making things up on the spot.
Yeah. But he's also not doing a lot to hide that he's Dracula.
He's over-explaining everything. There's a part where Mina gets there, and spoiler warning, Dracula has already killed Harker. Mina gets there, and she's like, oh, where's Jonathan? And Dracula goes, I had to send him into town to get some books for me. He's going to be gone for a couple days.
Yeah.
And he says it like that with those pauses. It's like, yeah, like you can just say, oh, he's getting some books for me.
There's another excuse in the next scene. Where Dracula takes Jonathan into his library, which is in a cave, apparently. And he says, I need you to catalog all these books. Now, my niece and I are going to be gone tomorrow. All day.
Like, don't go down into the basement. And if you see any coffins... That's normal. Don't open them up.
But
also, we're not vampires, and she's my niece.
But Dracula is standing directly in front of a reflective surface, and Jonathan notices that he doesn't have a reflection. The shot of the reflection is clearly a CGI thing, because you only see the reflections when it's a close-up shot of the bookcase with the like a glass door. When it's a wide shot, you don't even see Jonathan's reflection in that door.
You mean when they're standing shoulder to shoulder, facing the camera and looking at each other?
Yes. There's not enough light in that room to reflect on, you know, glass that's not a mirror. But the shot of Jonathan looking at the reflection is like he's looking into a pool of water. It's so evidently CGI'd. It's... so weird. After the library scene, I think there's a scene of somewhere in there. There's a scene of Jonathan finding a book in the library that explains everything about Dracula.
Oh, it's the biggest book that has been left open on the table.
Eventually, it gets to be nighttime. Tanya comes back into Jonathan's room and just takes her shirt off.
Jonathan knocks the first time she tries to seduce him. Harker knocks the picture of Mina that he carries, the framed picture of Mina that he carries. Off the table and cuts his hand and there's blood. And so Tanya starts to suck the blood out of his hand. And then she steals the picture of Mina and burns it. And then she comes into his room and is like, hey, I'm just going to take my clothes off and whatever happens, happens, buddy.
After she takes her clothes off and she starts to try to bite Harker, like they start getting close, Dracula teleports into the room, knocks her across the room in another... ludicrous CGI shot.
It's so hilarious. Because she is full-on naked, and he, like, Jedi force pushes her across the floor.
Yes.
And it looks... I don't know how they did it. It looks exactly like it would if they had, like, a belt around her and a rope and just yanked her across the room.
I think she's just clearly CGI'd. Like, it's a CGI'd person. And then he grabs Jonathan, fangs out, and just goes, no, he's mine! It's the only time Dracula yells in the whole movie. And yeah. he grabs Jonathan and bites his neck. Seems like that would be it for Jonathan. But it isn't.
No, he's going to stick around for a little bit.
He wakes up in a room in Dracula's castle. And we see him fiddle with doors for like 3 minutes.
He stumbles. He's weak and drained of blood, and we need to see in real time his attempt to escape.
He stumbles around. He fiddles with door handles. He takes forever to just try to get a door open. Eventually, he gets a door open. He walks outside. A wolf runs up to him. Changes into Dracula in, again, some killer, awful CGI. There's one transitional shot of Dracula turning from a wolf back into Dracula that is just like, again, PlayStation 1. And Dracula turns back into Dracula, and then he bites him again. And that is the last we see of Jonathan for a while. After that scene, Mina shows up at that same super fake train station and is met by Lucy at the train station. And again, there is a long, long sequence of just Lucy and Mina making small talk.
Yeah, just like, how was your trip? Oh, it was a long trip from England.
Yeah.
And it goes on for so long.
Did you like the women's dresses on the train? Oh, I saw some beautiful dresses.
This part is my favorite part. It is the most Tommy Wiseau thing in the entire movie. When Mina and Lucy get to the mayor's house, they get out of the carriage that was transporting them from the train station. There are two kids that walk by. And the kids, there's like a dubbed-in 80-yard line where one of the kids just goes, "What beautiful women."
I mean, it's very accurate. They're very pretty.
Sure.
The thing about this movie is that I don't know if this was intentional or not, because again, I'm not sure that Dario Argento has ever seen another Dracula movie. Harker could not look more like the porn version of Keanu Reeves.
He really does.
Like, I expect him to be in a movie later this year called John Dick. That's how much he looks like Keanu Reeves, but like the porno version. Mina, because of that, I can't stop seeing her as looking like a vaguely porno version of Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
Because she is very Winona Ryder-ish.
I don't think... We were saying that all the actors in this movie look like porno versions of the Francis Ford Coppola Dracula actors. But I don't think that's definitely not true for Dracula and Van Helsing.
No, because he doesn't look like Dracula. He just looks like a cold rich man.
Yeah, and Rutger Hauer just looks like Rutger Hauer wandered in from the street. He doesn't look like Anthony Hopkins in any way, shape, or form.
We should say the next thing that's relevant to the plot happens 10 minutes after Mina arrives.
Yeah,
a solid 10 minutes, and that is. Lucy gets bitten.
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about how Jonathan's job is really hard, and so he's probably not coming back to the mayor's house that night. Mina worries at length about Jonathan coming back, and it's just a lot of wheel spinning. But yes, the next relevant thing is that Lucy's at home. Dracula just straight up teleports into her room. Which sort of takes away any need for him to turn into animals. If he could just teleport, why is he turning into animals? He can literally just materialize in a room.
Yeah, this movie has a lot of weird ideas about Dracula having really cool powers, but like they don't really work.
Or it doesn't make sense for him to do... these other things he does if he can do this thing.
Basically, Dracula's playing Mega Man 2, and he got the Metal Blade. And so he's not going to... like, he doesn't need to use the Crash Bomber. You know, he doesn't need to use the Leaf Shield. He's just going to use Metal Blade for the rest of the game. But he's still going to, like... okay, I'll turn into a cloud of flies this one time just to see what it's like. Okay, back to just teleporting.
It might be fun. The time he turns into the cloud of flies actually makes a degree of sense, in that it seems like he's trying to intimidate people.
Yeah, but, like, the cloud of flies is actually, I think, a really cool part of the movie. Like, it's a really cool way for him to make an entrance. It's a really cool way to sell him as this. It's the one time in this movie that Dracula is genuinely horrifying. And then Thomas Kretschmann immediately looks apologetic about it. Like, he's like, oh, sorry, guys. I didn't mean to turn into a cloud of flies.
Well, it just, like, he's always so calm. He just starts, like, calmly walking to the table. But we're not to that scene quite yet.
Mina gets bitten, or Lucy gets bitten.
Lucy's at home. Dracula appears. And there's the implication that she's bitten. And then the next morning, she's sitting at the breakfast table with Mina. And Mina's like, you look like garbage.
You look goth.
And Lucy's like, yes, my head hurts and my bones hurt. I don't think I can teach my piano lessons today. There's a scene where Lucy goes out into the town for some reason. She sees Dracula's right-hand man, presumably to ask about where Jonathan is, but nothing comes of it, so it doesn't matter. She comes back to the house, the mayor's house, and the mayor is trying to get this ribbon, this choker, that Lucy has around her neck.
It's a scarf. She's like wearing a scarf in bed, you know.
Yeah. And the mayor's like, I must look. And finally he gets the scarf off of her neck. And there's no bite. So why was she wearing the scarf? But there's no bite. And Lucy's like, what must you look at? And then there is a fade to black and like they're going to commercial.
That happens 3 or 4 times where it just kind of like TV movie in the 80s. Just real quick fade out, real quick fade back in.
Yeah, act break. It's an act break. From every indication, Lucy hasn't been turned yet.
Well,
so it's a little bit weird.
Well, it's a good thing that we've got this scene coming up where, you know, Lucy and Mina, Lucy's just going to get naked and stand in the bathtub while Mina sponges her down like you do with your bros, you know?
Yeah, for some reason, Mina is giving Lucy a bath.
I think it's supposed to be because she's been so sick, right?
I guess.
And so Mina's going to give her, like, a little sponge bath. I mean, also, it's because I'm starting to think that Dario Argento is a huge perv.
For his own daughter?
Yeah, I think that is implicit in this film. Because they're actually, like, pouring water on Lucy. Asia Argento, I don't think, has any makeup on. So she doesn't look like pale. She just looks like a naked lady with bikini tan lines.
Mina like leans down to clean the back of Lucy's leg and notices there are bite marks on the back of her knee. And Lucy just goes, "Oh, those are bug bites." And instead of saying, "No, that's bullshit. That's a vampire bite," Mina's just like, "Okay." And that is the end of that scene. That is the entirety of that scene.
This is where Asia Argento's accent comes through the strongest. She's like, it's an insect bite.
Okay, so Mina goes to to Castle Dracula. There is a short scene where this is the scene where Dracula gives her the excuse of about Jonathan being in town for a couple days
rides there. She goes there on a horse, and there's a decapitated statue of the Virgin Mary that the horse freaks out and sees, because that horse is Catholic.
Well, I don't know if the horse is freaked out by the Mary statue or by the wolves that are chasing them.
Oh, right, I forgot there were wolves in that scene.
But either way,
it was an illusion, I'm sorry.
Yeah, either way, the horse freaks out. Mina falls to the ground. The wolves encroach on her, and then another wolf comes running in and scares off the other wolves. And I guess we're supposed to think that that wolf is Dracula. But at Dracula's castle, Dracula gives her the excuse of Jonathan had to go to town to get some books. And he'll be gone for a couple days.
he's on a 3-day book shopping trip.
Yeah. So Mina's like, oh, okay, he's not here. All right.
And then Dracula's just kind of like, But I mean, if you want to make out, I mean, we could make out since, you know, he's going to be buying books.
Yeah, and she's sort of pulled in a little bit, but she fights it and she leaves. And there's there's a long scene where we see her walking down the steps. We see her unhitch her horse.
She puts on her gloves.
She throws the reins back onto the horse's back. She mounts the horse and she rides away. We could not just have a cut to her on her horse outside riding away.
This, of all the movies we have watched for Movie Fighters, this is the only movie we have ever stopped in the middle of. Because I was like, I gotta go get a cup of coffee. This is too much. I cannot sit here and just watch this or I will fall asleep. By the way, it was 7:30 at night when I said that.
Okay, a few things that happen in the meantime. Mina goes to a priest, the town priest, the one who is very dubbed over, and says, listen, I need some help. And the priest goes, I don't think I can help you, but I'll see what I can do. There's a guy who might be able to help.
Well, in the meantime, Lucy has died.
She, her dad, the mayor, is very upset. That night, Van Helsing just walks into the mayor's house while Mina is standing around, and the mayor is passed out drunk.
It's so funny because she like goes and I guess takes the glass out of his hand because he has drunk himself to sleep. And so she's like backing away from him like cartoonishly, and she just like backs into Rutger Hauer.
And Rutger Hauer says, hello, my name is Abraham Van Helsing. The priest told me that I should come help you. I think that I can help you. Is there lodging here? And, you know, Mina says yes. He says, what happened with Lucy? She tells him about the bite and that she didn't believe that it was a bug bite, all of that stuff. Eventually, Van Helsing is just like, all right, I'm going to go find a place to stay. And hey, don't leave the door open. Anybody could just walk in here. And then he leaves. And I actually love the, hey, don't leave the door open. Anybody could just walk in line. Because it's just like Van Helsing is just kind of like a stickler for the rules. Like this version of Van Helsing is just a guy who loves rules. He goes to an inn and there's a scene where he like pulls out a big comical bag of vampire hunting tools.
He has his carrot top trunk.
Yeah. He's got a giant metal cross in there. Like a bronze cross. He's got a Bible. And that's all we see in this giant bag. But I assume there's supposed to be more stuff in there.
But it's kind of great because it's like so funny. So Rutger Hauer then goes down to the mausoleum, the crypt, where Lucy is seemingly interred. And this is where I said that he is in his going to Golden Corral clothes.
Oh, he shows up in these clothes. It's the only costume we see him wearing except in one flashback. Where he is wearing, in the flashback, he is wearing an inside-out lab coat.
The guy next to him is wearing a lab coat backwards so that it looks like a smock, but he never turns around.
That's right. And Rutger Hauer's, I guess he's just in a regular lab coat, but he's got on like this crazy like ribbon tie. Again, more costume shop clothes.
Like again, I feel like Dario Argento like went to a Spirit Halloween and was like, it's like, oh my god, they like already have costumes for this guy. Already got costumes for this Dracula guy. We should get like all these costumes.
But he didn't buy a Dracula costume.
He didn't buy Dracula. He bought a peacoat and a cravat.
He bought every costume but Dracula.
I would believe that, what is his name, Thomas Kretschmann. I would believe that he just showed up on set in this coat. He was like, well, it's a very nice coat.
He's like,
I thought it was going to be cold here.
He was just like, I'm not going to change. I'm only here for a couple days. I'm not going to change.
Got it in one.
Old one-take Thomas, they call him. So,
oh, man, what if he did a movie with two-takes Franks?
So, yes, Van Helsing goes into the tomb where Lucy is buried. And my comment about this tomb is that it's a repurposed set from Star Trek, the original series, because it literally just looks like a cave from that show with, like, the papier-mâché rocks in the background.
There are a lot of comparisons to Xena to be made, a lot of comparisons to Jack of All Trades to be made in this film, and it is never more evident than here in the crypt.
Van Helsing goes down there by himself. He opens up Lucy's coffin. She's not in there, as you would expect. And he starts going like, okay, what should I do here? Meanwhile, Mina comes down there and meets him. And she says, what are you doing down here? What have you done with Lucy's body? And Van Helsing's like, listen, this is not what you think. And Mina's like, well, you better explain it to me. So he tells this story about how he used to be a doctor in a sanitarium. This is where we see him in that ridiculous costume and the guy in the backwards smock slash lab coat, where he's like walking around in a sanitarium and there are just a bunch of vampires in locked cells, including Dracula.
Well, I don't think that's what it was. I don't think the people in the cells were supposed to be vampires. I think they were supposed to be the cartoonish depictions of the mentally ill. And that just Dracula like rolled up onto this place and was like, sweet, buffet.
I thought they were all vampires.
I think it's just Dracula.
You could be right.
Look, not much makes sense about this part.
They could be just mentally ill people that Dracula decided to feast on. And look, that was
this
how...
entire scene could just be Van Helsing going, I've seen this before. It's called a vampire. Like, that's it. Like, that's literally all you need.
But for some reason, we get a flashback where he encounters a vampire for the first time and decides to become a vampire hunter. Anyway, Lucy comes down into the crypt with the corpse of a little girl that she was giving piano lessons to. She lays out the little girl on a little altar. And as this is happening, Van Helsing puts together two sticks into the form of a cross and starts like telling Lucy to back off. I do not know why he doesn't have his giant metal cross in this scene. He brought all these tools and then he didn't take them with him into the crypt. Don't know why. Anyway, the cross knocks Lucy back for a second, but then she like smacks the sticks out of his hand.
Lucy is all super excited to see Mina, by the way. Like when she sees Mina, she's like, hey!
Yeah. It's just like,
oh
Mina's
my
just
god!
Like, Mina's just like, Lucy, aren't you dead? And she's like, Mina! It is so nice to see you.
It is so, oh my god. I hate you. You look great.
I look like,
I'm going to finish eating this little girl.
I look like death, you know, but you look so good.
You can do anything with your hair. I'm so jealous. Like, while there is a dead body behind her.
So, eventually, there's a little bit of a struggle that results in Van Helsing smashing a lantern over Lucy and burning her to death.
Again, we get to see Asia Argento burn to death in real time.
And the fire effects are not good. They make fire look like a liquid. Is fire a way to kill a vampire?
Yes.
It is. Okay.
I don't know if that comes up in Dracula, but it is it's like, you know, purifying flames are a pretty big thing.
Okay. The Flaming Whip, I guess, from Castlevania is a...
Well, yeah, I mean, Castlevania is my source of knowledge on vampire lore.
This movie has several, like, different ways to kill vampires in it.
Including stabbing them in the stomach.
Yeah, that's gonna happen soon.
So while all that's been going on, Dracula paid a visit to the town council and killed them all in a scene that takes 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's long. This is the scene where Dracula shows up as a swarm of flies. Before that, there's a long conversation among the town council about what they're going to do about Dracula, whether they're going to break his truce with them or with him. As they're discussing whether to break the truce, it seems like Dracula's mole on the council has alerted him to what's happening. Because Dracula kills everybody on the council but his, like, right-hand man. There's, like, all these dead bodies scattered out amongst the floor. And this scene includes Dracula ripping somebody's throat out with his teeth, scratching people in the neck and slitting their throats, killing a dude by throwing a sword at him, which is your 3D moment of the scene, and then he makes the police lieutenant guy shoot himself in the head, suicide style.
Yeah. Dracula has telekinesis, but it is the laziest telekinesis. Like, when he frees Renfield from the jail in a scene that ultimately doesn't matter, he, like, has his hands at his side and just, like, moves his finger. And you would think, like, you know, he doesn't have to look like he's struggling or anything, but if he could just wave his arm and do it, that would be better.
But, and he also waits forever between, like, releasing one shackle and the other shackle. Like, I was going to say this about that scene where he releases Renfield, where it's just like, they're just standing around. I said, as that scene got it started and Dracula was just standing there, say action! Because there's a long time where he does nothing.
Well, when he makes the constable guy kill himself, someone on Twitter described it to me as he yawned a man to death,
yes.
Which is exactly what it looks like, because Dracula stands there with his mouth open, and the guy, like, struggles with the gun, like, and he struggles really hard because it takes a long time. And so Dracula is just standing there with his mouth open at this guy for 30 seconds! Until the guy finally shoots himself in the head and then blinks a couple times and dies.
It almost seems like he's, like, he's doing what he's forcing the constable guy to do. Because the constable guy is opening his mouth too. But Dracula isn't holding, like, mimicking or miming a gun under his chin. He's just opening his mouth. I don't get it. Anyway, all these dead bodies are strewn about the council chamber, which looks like a lunchroom. And then Dracula sits down at the head of the table and, like, puts his hand down on the table very casually. Like he's about to take a nap. Like, sit down in a chair and take a big old nap.
With the entire bottom of his face is smeared with blood. But again, it is the color. What is a good way to describe that color, Matt? Like, it's like Marvel Comics red. Like, it's the red of the Marvel logo.
I would call that color magenta.
It is in a lot of scenes, but part of me isn't sure if Dario Argento has never seen a Dracula movie or if he loves the Hammer Dracula movies and wanted to have, like, you know, the scene where the hero arrives in the inn and tries to order food, and then, like, blood that is obviously just like red paint thrown on everything.
Yeah. So we have set up what is the final act of the movie. Are you ready? Van Helsing stakes that little girl through the heart because there's no bringing her back. And then he goes to the priest and says, "Hey, I need your help to kill Dracula." And the priest says, "No way. I cannot help you with that guy. You do not know what he's capable of." And Van Helsing's like, "Okay, I'm just going to go do it." So Van Helsing leaves. He goes to Dracula's castle.
Well, first he goes to the blacksmith's and in real time makes 4 silver bullets and grinds up some garlic.
Yeah, we see that entire bullet-making process throughout, in which I guess he infuses the bullets with a little bit of garlic. As that's happening, Mina goes to Dracula's castle, sort of unable to resist the call of Dracula.
She well, Dracula goes to her room at the mayor's house, and there's no, like, you have to invite him in. It's just Dracula just goes where he wants, and so he just walks in, picks her up, and carries her, and when she wakes up, he gives her a Renfair dress to wear.
That's right. So Mina's at Dracula's castle. Van Helsing is prepared to go to Dracula's castle. He walks in. He starts, like, searching around, him and the priest. Tanya is dealt with almost immediately. She gets stabbed in the chest with a cross.
A cross that's also a sword.
Yes. So that is yet another way to kill a vampire. He opens up the coffin where Jonathan is hanging out. This is the first time we've seen Jonathan in a while. He stakes Jonathan in the stomach And then the stake just somehow moves to Jonathan's chest. Van Helsing's just kind of like going through the house trying to figure out what's up. He looks out the window and he sees Dracula and Mina walking toward a graveyard. As Dracula is explaining that Mina is exactly like his dead wife.
We should note here that Rutger Hauer's Van Helsing is the most efficient on-screen killer since Leon.
He really is.
Well, he's making the bullets in the blacksmith shop. The blacksmith comes home to find out who this was who just battered his door open with a rock. And Hauer just kind of throws him against the wall, and a nail goes through the back of the blacksmith's head and shoves his eye out, which is hilarious.
Yep.
When he's going through Castle Dracula, Renfield runs up on him, and Rutger Hauer just effortlessly cuts his throat.
He sidesteps both of them. That's his one move. Sidesteps him
and just like right in the throat.
His one move is the sidestep. He sidesteps the blacksmith, who is Dracula's right-hand man. He sidesteps Renfield, and I think he sidesteps Tanya.
I think he sidesteps Tanya, and then he just, when Harker sits up in his coffin, he stakes him right in the stomach, and then when the shot goes back to Harker, the stake has clearly moved.
Yes.
Okay. Like, it's the low stomach, too. It's like the right kidney.
Oh, yeah, it's low. It's like, hilarious. It's like in his appendix. So Van Helsing follows Dracula and Mina out to the graveyard. Dracula is showing Mina his wife's grave. And he basically says, "Hey, you look exactly like my wife. You're going to be my new wife."
I wonder if that grave has an inscription.
It does. It's in Latin. And Mina.
I hope someone can translate it for us out loud really slowly.
Mina reads it out loud very slowly, which is very helpful. All that's happening, and they're kind of talking about the grave, Van Helsing catches up to them in the graveyard and starts saying, like, "All right, Dracula, we're gonna finally settle this now." And Mina goes, "Kill him," about Van Helsing, because she's still hypnotized. Dracula walks up to Van Helsing. Van Helsing pulls out a stake, and Dracula knocks it out of his hand. Then Van Helsing pulls out his gun with his silver bullets in it. Dracula knocks that out of his hand because they are standing not even 2 feet apart from each other. They are, again, weird staging.
Yeah, and look, Rutger Hauer, not a quick draw champion. It takes him a long time to get that gun out. But it takes even longer for Dracula to knock it out of his hand. Like, he has it pointed at him, and he starts talking.
So Dracula knocks the gun out of Van Helsing's hand, and then just starts punching the shit out of him.
Just starts wailing on his face for a long time. Just over and over punching him in the face for 2 minutes.
Now, this is a Dracula who we've seen just kill people effortlessly as a swarm of flies.
He tore a man's head off.
He tore that guy's head off. And he killed the mayor. We skipped over this scene. This is when he was going to get Mina at the mayor's house.
Oh, I was saving that for high points, buddy.
He goes to the mayor's house in the form of a praying mantis or grasshopper. I don't really know which one. And, like, takes his grasshopper leg and shoves it into the mayor's stomach. And kills him that way. And that grasshopper is ridiculous looking.
It's so good. That's the only scene I saw of this movie, and I thought, like, it looks like a Sci-Fi Channel original from maybe like 3 years ago.
I have a question about Dracula's animal transformations, but we'll save that for high points and low points. So Dracula's wailing away on Van Helsing. Van Helsing is telling Mina, "Snap out of it, Mina, pick up that gun and shoot Dracula." Mina's kind of snapping out of the hypnotism. She picks up the gun, she holds it out toward Dracula, and there's an interminable wait to see whether she's going to shoot him or not.
Dracula makes no attempt to take it away.
No, Dracula's just like, "What are you going to do?" And finally, she shoots. The bullet hits Dracula, and he dies super slowly. He, like, starts to unbutton his shirt. This is the first time he's taken off his overcoat and shirt. He unbuttons his shirt and his like ribs are sticking out and he's starting to die and he's like melting away. He turns into ashes. And Van Helsing says, "It's a good thing I had enough garlic for that one bullet, even though we saw him make four." So Dracula is dead. Mina and Van Helsing walk out of the graveyard. And then we see Dracula, Dracula's ashes like spin into the form of an ash wolf and come toward the camera in 3D. And then the movie ends with the theremin metal.
An operatic theremin metal song called Kiss Me Dracula.
Tie points of Argento's Dracula.
Ooh, Matt, this is tough.
Music.
I mean, there's a couple of pretty ladies who don't have any clothes on in the movies. Is that a high point?
Can we say music?
The music is so weird and inappropriate that it loops back around to being amazing. Like, I can't imagine this movie having a different soundtrack.
Well, and also the music all builds to something. It all builds to that metal song at the end during the credits, which I have to give the movie some kind of credit for.
Like, they clearly started with this song and then worked backwards.
Correct.
And we're going to put a link to this song on moviefighterscast.com because it is, there's a 4 minute, 16 second music video on YouTube. Of course there is. I hope it involves them tuning up their instruments and rehearsing before playing this song. And but you should go watch it.
Learning how to play guitar, which is what this movie would have done. Let's see. What other high points are there? I mean, look, this isn't a high point per se. It's not an intentional high point, but there are definitely some laugh out loud moments in this movie.
There's nothing that's good about this movie, but there are so many enjoyable parts of this movie.
Right. For instance, the praying mantis scene.
Yeah, the praying mantis scene is amazing. I mean, but it's terrible. It's completely awful, but it is also, like, you need to see it.
Yeah, it's sort of required viewing.
It is a fat man getting stabbed in the chest by a terrible CGI praying mantis, like a 7-foot-tall praying mantis.
I feel like every high point we have is also going to be a low point, but these are the low points that we enjoyed.
Yeah, like, that's, I mean, if you want to talk about the stuff that I enjoyed, like, I enjoy the accents of all the characters being inconsistent and weird. I enjoy Dracula kind of being out of breath all the time and kind of mumbling.
Yeah, I enjoy even the bad fake-looking backgrounds to a degree. Like, all this stuff is what came together to make me say, we have to watch this.
Yeah, I mean, I would much rather have this movie that is super bright colored and bonkers than, say, Doom, you know, where everything's kind of gray and dark and it doesn't, like, there's only like 5 minutes of that movie that are worth watching because of the 5 minutes where they're like, okay, now we're gonna get weird.
Yeah, I mean, even like the costumes in this movie, they're clearly as cheap as hell, but you look at them and you're like, look at those costumes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only high point of this movie is how weird it is.
Like, just the you have to see this weird shit aspect to it.
Yes, yes. That, like, I mean, because that covers everything. It's weirdly shot, it's weirdly acted, it's weirdly costumed, the CGI is weird, the premise is weird, everyone's performance is weird. So that's the high point. This movie's weird start to finish. It's 110 minutes of cuckoo bananas.
Let's talk about the for real low points of the movie. And I have one very clear, very main low point.
Well, I think it's probably going to be the same one that I have.
It's how long everything takes.
Like, for a movie that's this weird and this eye-grabbingly bizarre, it's so boring.
Yeah.
So much of it.
I think there is a cut of this movie. I mean, I think this movie, as it is, has the potential to become something of a midnight movie cult classic, in that it's, you know, going to be celebrated for its badness. That said, I think that you could do an 80-minute cut of this movie, or even shorter, that would be like instant classic, shown at midnight on Halloween at theaters all over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But instead, you've just got these long stretches of boring scenes that don't matter and aren't funny. I could forgive the scenes, the extraneous scenes, if they were funny, but they're not. There are a lot of them that are just like conversations that don't need to be in there, or Jonathan ordering food and there's no payoff to that, or tons of Renfield stuff that doesn't matter. The priest is a character that could be cut out and it doesn't matter. There's so much stuff that has no reason to be in the movie and just takes up time.
Yeah, like I said, there is a lean cut of this movie that is highly enjoyable. There is a 55-minute cut of this movie that would, like, everyone would love.
But this one is 110.
Yeah, it's really, really long. Other low points, I mean, look, the acting in this movie is terrible. Everything about the acting is terrible. The line delivery is terrible. The staging is terrible. I think Mina is probably the best actress in the movie, and she has several scenes where she is just, like, saying words.
But again, these low points, like, I would say that one of my low points is the ADR and how distracting it is, and how some of the characters that are entirely dubbed don't even bother to mouth the words, you know? But that comes back around to being a high point. It's another reason why this movie is compelling in the weird way that it is compelling. It's so hard to separate high points from low points in this movie.
Like, we have finally found the movie that our foolproof system is completely flummoxed by.
All right, with that said, let's do some final thoughts. Chris, what are your final thoughts about Argento's Dracula?
This movie's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I would highly recommend it.
Yes, that is exactly how I feel about it. I would tell everybody I know to go watch it, especially if they are fans of Dario Argento, because that's the X factor that really makes this movie stand out. It's not just a bad movie that some guy made. It's not just another bad Uwe Boll movie. You know, because we watched Blood Rain. Like, this is about on the level of Blood Rain.
Yeah, about.
But this is Dario Argento.
The Room has that magic because you know that, like I've said about this movie, that it's all amateurs. Like, Tommy Wiseau has no idea what he's doing. So he's like, you know, trying to figure it out as he goes, and it's all there on the screen. It's you know, Troll 2. None of those people are actors. You know, there's the one weird Italian director. Did he direct this movie? I would believe you if you told me that this movie was an Italian film by the director of Troll 2.
There's a part of me that wonders if this movie wasn't ghost-directed by somebody else, and because Asia Argento is in it, Dario Argento slapped his name on it.
Like, it has that same feeling, but it's not. It's a dude who has directed 24 movies. It's a dude who has written so many movies who, like, just by experience alone should be better than this.
Yeah, and you go back to watch his movies from the 70s, and they are great. It is mind-blowing that a professional filmmaker who is revered made this movie.
I will say this. This is the IMDb summary of this movie. Asia Argento stars in horror legend Dario Argento's sexy spin on the classic tale about the sharp-toothed count who craves human blood. None of that is true. Asia Argento is not the star.
Nope.
It is not a sexy film. It's just a film where two women get naked occasionally, and one of them is being sponge-bathed at the time. And this is almost no resemblance to the classic tale.
No. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about this movie.
But you should watch it.
You should watch
it. If you are listening to this, you should watch it. It is on Netflix. Just don't be afraid to skip ahead.
Yeah. But definitely watch it. Like, watch it for the grasshopper scene, the praying mantis scene. Watch it for the weird, porny atmosphere. Watch it for the bad acting. Watch it for the terrible backgrounds. Watch it for the weird lighting. Watch it for the crazy theremin music. That all makes it worth seeing. But it is so confusingly terrible. And with that, we have wrapped up Spooky Month here on Movie Fighters. If you would like to send us an email, you can do it at moviefighterscast@gmail.com. If you want to send us a movie recommendation or otherwise just comment on the show, or if you want to sponsor us or anything else, let us know at moviefighterscast@gmail.com. Look, check out our website, which is moviefighterscast.com. That's where we'll have a link to that video we talked about earlier, which you're going to want to watch. Also, go to iTunes, search for Movie Fighters, find the show. If you like the show, subscribe and leave us a review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the more we're featured on iTunes. And we need that. And we're actually, you know, not that high on reviews just yet. We've got a few, but not as many as we would like to have. So go leave us a review. Thank you to Michael Kill for our theme music. Thank you to Sean Bogus for designing our website. We're going to be back to our regular Movie Fighters schedule next time on our next episode in 2 weeks.
I think we have a special treat for that one, too.
We may have a special treat. We're going to get back to our listener requests very soon.
But yeah, I do have a copy of The Calamari Wrestler in my house right now, so ready for that.
So be ready for that when we get around back to that. But for now, everybody, thanks for listening to this Dracula-centric episode of Movie Fighters. We'll see you all again in 2 weeks.
Happy Halloween!
This has been a Kaleidos Media production.